This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
This is your current affairs program, The Rainbow Report, on Joy 94.9.
Good evening, Doug Pollard here again with The Rainbow Report. Mention Idaho to most people, as I just did to Jeffrey on the desk now, and they think you're talking about the US state that's famous for potatoes and not much else. And no, it's not the one where same-sex couples started marrying this week. That's Iowa. But Idaho also stands for the International Day Against Homophobia. That's quite a big deal overseas, but to date, Australia's contribution has been pretty feeble. Greg Adkins hopes that'll change this year, and he joins us in the studio later to explain what's happening in Melbourne and how you can join in and have some fun. Our community is often accused of seeing homophobia where it doesn't really exist, but it does seem to be magnifying the effect of the recession for GLBTIQ people. Some of the first things companies are cutting to save money are gay supportive initiatives and, sadly, gay and lesbian staff. We'll talk to Harley Dennett of the Sydney Star Observer, who's got that story. Despite the name, Queensland could be fairly described as a homophobic state, with no recognition of same-sex relationships or same-sex parents. The age of consent appears to be equal at 16, but a 1990 sodomy law makes anal intercourse with anyone under 18 a criminal offence. Queenslanders have been campaigning for years for repeal, but back in October the Queensland government quietly made it all tougher. Miles Heffernan from Q News will tell us all about it. Joining me in the studio tonight, the feisty, snappy-dressing co-convener of the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, Hayley Conway. Will that do better than Redoubtable last time?
Yes, far better, thank you.
How have you been?
Oh, good, thanks, Doug. How are you?
Ah, well, at least I haven't got this nasty bug that's going around.
What, swine flu?
No,
yeah, good.
No, Miss Piggy flu. No, I'm fine. I'm still being gissy-gissy crummy. Also tonight we have Corey Earlham, who is going to talk to us about the government's response to the response for the 2020 summit. I think they said we should have civil unions and ready. He said no. Is that right?
Oh, he said we shouldn't even have marriage. It's bizarre. We'll talk about it later, but I wouldn't even call it a response.
Well, actually, that 2020 summit seems an awful long time ago. And finally, Kay Sarra joins us to pay tribute to golden girl Bea Arthur, who died last week. And I'm also hoping she'll say something about the swine flu so I can do an intro about a pig in a poke bonnet. But I'm not holding my breath. You can't have everything.
Yes. Hello.
It's a very fetching yes. bonnet,
Kay. I've spoken to Miss Piggy about this swine flu thing. She has some very interesting things to say about that.
Oh, well, we'll hear about that anon. Well, do you remember the 2020 summit when movie stars like Cate Blanchett went to Canberra to write the script for Kevin's remake of Camelot? Well, reality hasn't really lived up to that promise. Now we seem to be living through a succession of horror movie remakes. Great Depression 2, The Return of the Boat People, and now Pandemic Panic When Pigs Attack. So the bright promise of the summit has dimmed somewhat, especially for gays and lesbians. Corey Earlham, what did the summit recommend for us, and what are we actually going to get from Mr. Rudd?
Well, look, there's three areas where the summit talked about same-sex issues, and I'll just briefly go over two of them. The positive side, one of the always said you should start on the positive, is they talked about the fact that the government recognises all forms of families, including single and same-sex families. So that's a very strong statement by the government, that our families are the same as everybody else's families. So big tick to Kevin for that.
Mm-hmm.
They then talked about in response to the question of give same-sex relationships equal legal recognition across Australia, they talked about marriage. They talked about the fact that people who are not married should not be discriminated against, and that they did all their things last year, which was great from a legislative point of view, where
right.
that's what Acts of Parliament is. But there's no comments about them committing to update all their policies and procedures. There's thousands of policies and procedures that use the word man, woman, husband, wife. So it's good to see that they'll actually hopefully do that, but they haven't said they will.
This goes back to Nicola Roxon's famous audit of everything in the government that was going to be done before they changed their promises.
Exactly, and the Attorney General last year committed that in 2009 they would look at non-legislative ways of being discriminated against and review that, and the government's indicated that they're going to be able to do something about it, but they haven't specified. We're going to spend the time, effort and energy to actually make sure that there's not a single policy at the federal government that discriminates against same-sex couples. So it looks like it's going to be possibly on the shoulders of people like myself and others in the community to push the government into making sure they do that, and if they don't, identifying where they haven't done it and chasing them up over it.
So, basically, we've got to carry on pushing and pushing and pushing as per usual. Nothing's going to be automatic. I suppose, you know, I suppose they're still being pretty overwhelmed with this so-called global financial crisis, swine flu and everything else, boat people and God knows what, so...
Well, I'm sorry.
We've got to keep putting them back ourselves back on the agenda, don't we?
Look, I think you put your finger on it straight away. Swine flu in particular, I think that's been a fabulous distraction for everything that's been happening, you know, economically in the world. And yes, I mean, I just noticed that the Rudd government just this week did some action on, I think it's $42 million they're giving toward domestic violence. So they can certainly find the resources to talk about issues that are outside the economic crisis brief when it suits them. And I kind of just, I feel very unloved here. And Kay, I feel like we're being left out of the loop.
Kay, I couldn't agree more, but of that $42 million, will their policies and procedures make sure that it targets same-sex couples in their domestic violence?
Because these are issues for us too, exactly. Yeah.
Perhaps the more interesting one, and the one that just has got my goat completely, is, and I'll read it to you, same-sex couple recommendation, introduce same-sex civil unions. Here's the first point. The recommendation wasn't to introduce same-sex civil unions. The recommendation was to recognise same-sex civil unions.
Right.
Big difference there. One says introduce it in Australia. The other says recognise, which is introduce it in Australia and recognise overseas civil unions.
Right.
Okay, here's the first line from the government's response. The government's policy on marriage reflects the widely held view in the community that marriage is between a man and a woman.
Well, hang on a minute, we weren't talking about marriage, were we?
Exactly.
We were talking about civil unions.
Exactly. Here again, we've got the federal government mixing up the waters between civil unions and marriage. And for anybody out there that thinks civil unions is going to be easier to get than marriage, this is proof in the pudding on a government document that they're actually going to treat it exactly the same. They're going to fight civil unions just as much as they're going to fight marriage.
Mm-hmm. And look, I mean, another problem here is obviously when they're talking about, you know, this broadly held view, and you've got to wonder where that polling comes from. Is it from Rudd's church? Is that where it's sitting there?
The polls.
Raise your hands.
Well, good point. Where are the polls? This is absolutely right.
But and this is my second gripe. The interesting thing is back last year they were talking about the majority view.
Mm.
So this is really important. The government's conceded that there is no longer a majority view in Australians that support a same-sex marriage ban. They're now using the language widely held view.
They have kind of stepped back a little bit.
They've started to concede defeat.
Yeah, because when that terminology is challenged abroad, and I'm thinking of the US of A, fabulous land of milk and honey that it is, it's found to crumble like a house of cards, because generally speaking, most people don't give a rat's boom whether, as long as it's not in their backyard, they don't really care.
Now, the last bit of this is they talk about, as part of the government's same-sex reforms, registered relationships will also be recognised in many Commonwealth laws to provide a consistent approach to the recognition of relationships.
Now, hold on. Where's that?
This is in their civil union response.
That's in their civil union response.
So not only have they actually turned around and said it's marriage-like, they've also said, oh, but we'll give you civil unions in response to registered relationships. But they've gone one step further and said it'll provide a more consistent approach. I don't know about you, but in the maths class that I went to, 3 states out of 8 areas don't make consistent approach.
And, having civil unions here and...
Really?
Three out of eight. Does not make equal consistent approach.
Well, it's not consistent.
Well, some of them don't have a response. Would be more consistent.
Some of them don't have a response at all. I mean,
that's right.
Well, some of them don't have a response at all. Some of them are dragging their heels. I mean, some of them are trying to give us civil unions where we can be married, like as in the ACT. Some are giving us relationship registers. Tasmania has something entirely its own. Which is reckoned to be better than anything else, of
course. It's not. You've got to remember that at the end of last year, Victoria did very similar to Tasmania and introduced caring relationships as well. So Tasmania and Victoria aren't that dissimilar other than the language that they use.
But, I mean, is there much chance...
We're on the continent.
Yeah. I mean, we'll be talking to...
Mainland Australia.
Yes, we'll be talking to Miles up in Queensland later about how they're proceeding with relationship recognition up there, or not, as the case most likely is.
Look, Queensland's doing an interesting thing at the moment, and we'll talk more with Miles about it, but they've said nothing before the election, but they've said, we want to talk to you, we want to have meetings. So they've put out the right messages under the radar. They've turned around and said, we're not going to have a conscience vote on surrogacy, which is a big issue here in Victoria, so they've got to have a party position. And they've said, we're going to explore the issue of same-sex couples. I think that Queensland's doing all the right things to slowly move the electorate towards accepting same-sex parenting. That being said, though, their terms of reference are not including things like recognising second parent adoption or things like recognising the non-biological mother on the birth certificate.
Okay.
So it's still a little bit of a way to go, but, you know, it's unfortunate they didn't do it now, but they're going down the right path in a slow way.
Slow is the word, I think, hey, isn't it?
It certainly is. And one of the other things of note as well is that it tends to take a state to fall well behind all the other states in Australia before they then make a number of steps to kind of catch up and end up well ahead of the pack, particularly in terms of same-sex recognition and families and those sorts of things.
So there's a kind of damming effect, and then somebody breaks the dam and
that's
it all comes
right,
out
yeah.
at once.
Yeah, and you know, so sometimes that can be a positive thing, but let's also remember, you know, the Queensland, they're coming back from a time of under Lawrence Springborg and people like that, like they can only go up from here.
Look, I guess the point is, are we a federation of states as a country or are we not? I mean, some federal leadership would be very nice in this issue, if you don't mind. I don't want to live in a country that has like different legislation according to civil unions or call it gay marriage. I'll use the big word gay marriage. I think it's a pretty good word. Well, I'm doing it with a hyphen. Anyway. No, but you know what I mean? Like, how absurd is that to be able to travel between states and have your partnership recognised less or more so in different states? That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, and what is your level of recognition here and there?
I want a little less leadership from this federal government.
We're not big enough to have separate states.
Look, you've got to give McClellan credit. The Federal Attorney General did raise the issue of civil unions, relationship registers, and they raised the issue of parenting at the last catch-up of all the state attorney generals, but they just raised it. He did a report.
Yeah, but I mean,
two meetings ago, they actually noted that he was going to do something and watch them. So, you know, I think the state-based position is slowly getting the wind kicked out of it.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, surely that's a failed policy now. I mean, the government's policy was, we'll get all the states to do a relationship recognition of some kind each, and then we'll federally recognise them all as being something equivalent to marriage.
Dear, and they've got nobody to do it, because when they announced it in 2007, the ACT had already tried to introduce something, and Victoria was well underway in all the consultation.
And Tasmania's been there for a while.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I think that's a failure, Mr. Rudd. Well, I'll tell you what, give it to Julia Gillard. She seems to be able to do everything else.
No. Don't even get me started. Next week we'll talk about social inclusion and the fact that gays and lesbians aren't in the platform for social inclusion when we should be.
Okay, well, we'll be right back.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
Keeping the GLBTI community up to date, this is The Rainbow Report.
This is Doug Pollard here, doing his level best to bring it to you. Also assisted, of course, by Corey Ellum and Hayley Conway and the ever-fragrant Kay Serra. Now, did you do anything for Idaho last year? Do you even know what Idaho is? Well, as far as we're concerned, Idaho is not a state full of potatoes. It's the International Day Against Homophobia, and it's coming up fast. Greg Adkins from the Anti-Violence Project is something of an expert on this. He's helping to coordinate what Victoria is doing this year, and he joins us now in the studio. So, welcome, Greg.
Thanks, Doug. Good to be here.
Now, first off, when is Idaho?
Well, it's actually May 17, and it's been every year since 2003.
But we don't seem to have done very much about it before.
Our community sometimes misses the ball, drops the ball, and we take a little bit longer to respond. But this is actually turning into something bigger than Ben-Hur, so we're quite excited.
Well, it's very popular overseas, isn't it?
It's huge. Right across the states, there are many campaigns taking place in towns, in cities, in states. And here in Australia, this year will be the biggest year we've ever had.
Correct. This originated in Canada, didn't it?
It started originally in Canada, and then...
French Canada.
The gentleman that set it up was actually a Frenchman in Canada from that part. And then it was adopted right around the world in different locations.
And Sydney did something on it last year, but this is the first time that Victoria is going to do something?
No. Look, as a state, it's the first large-scale Victorian statewide campaign we've done. Last year, a disparate group of people did it in different parts of Sydney, but this is the first time Sydney's also done a broad campaign, and the two largest states are now doing a huge campaign, which maybe next year might actually become a national campaign next year.
Why homophobia rather than, say, heterosexism? I noticed in Sydney that Carr sent out a press release talking about their Idaho is going to be homophobia and transphobia.
I think we are trying to link into people's awarenesses, and heterosexism is a fabulous phrase. I mean, coming forward report at La Tribune mentioned heterosexism, a brilliant report, but it doesn't resonate with the people. And we're trying to actually broaden this from the GLBT community across into the heterosexual community as well. The broad world here in Victoria is going to be part of this campaign.
Oh, I reckon we should have some people doing your photo kiosk with a message about trans issue and gender identity issues as well.
Well, look, explain to us what this photo kiosk thing is.
I will. The photo kiosk in Bourke Street, we hope to have a...
So you're going to have a kind of photo me booth kind of thing?
You watch this space. If you check out stophomophobiatoday.com, you'll find out exactly where the location will be in the Bourke Street Mall, and you can actually come down, have a photo taken with the message about homophobia that's personal to you, and it'll go up on the website, stophomophobiatoday.com. But the point I want to challenge
there... Just in case you didn't hear it the first time.
The point I want to challenge there is it's around transphobia. Most people that commit acts of violence towards transgender people aren't doing it because they're transphobic. They're homophobic. And that's what we're challenging. It's the homophobia. We're challenging the perpetrators of violence. And we're challenging their friends and loved ones and families to actually give them a shake. Take control.
And it's not just the Anti-Violence Project doing this?
Whole coalition of community partners here in Victoria.
Including Joy, I believe.
Including Joy.
And VGLRL, is that not
exactly
so?
Oh,
that's right. Yep, the lobby. Yep, we're all over it.
And what I was perhaps most impressed with is Victoria Police is involved.
Victoria Police are involved in a very special way, which we'll reveal in a week or two, but they're right behind this campaign, across the police force.
They've been pretty good on anti-violence issues generally, actually, over the last couple of years.
Are we going to see the new commissioner supporting our community?
Oh, yes.
We hope to. Watch this space. Who knows?
I'll be looking for Simon Odeland's photo on stophomophobiatoday.com.
Yeah, and look, as much as I love this new commissioner, he's never going to replace Christine in my heart. Never.
Hey. He's Christine. A man. He's got a bald head. I'm happy with that.
I am not.
I'm sure Greg is too. He said, but of course we don't have a webcam, so you can't see Greg's a chrome dome as
shining.
Well. Shining away in the corner. Why do we need another day? I mean, we've got a Pride Day, and we've got Midsummer, and we've got all these other things. Why do we need another day?
Well, Idaho isn't one day. Idaho is a challenge to people to carry this through 365 days a year. So it's not one day, it's a year. It's everything. It's part of our lives and challenges everyone to come on board with us.
But, I mean, we have enough of a struggle already, as I'm sure Hayley will attest, at getting people to be active. Of getting people, I mean, you know, you struggle to get people to be on the board of the VGLRL and to turn out for demos and things, you know.
Yep, it's true. Look, it is hard to get people active in the community, but I think it is also about having an issue that really resonates with someone that they feel that strongly about, that they feel that they can come out and fight for it. And absolutely, I think, you know, homophobia, queerphobia, transphobia, these are things that people really understand, because what is it, something like 80% of, you know, same-sex attracted people experience that kind of violence or harassment at least once in their lifetime. So
but
bring it home.
How are you going to persuade them that holding up a star or whatever else in front of a camera and putting the name on a website is going to help.
Well, it's the breadth and depth of this campaign. It's the schools that are going to badge Idaho and Stop Homophobia messages on their websites. It's the community groups and organisations that don't necessarily have one gay employee that are actually going to be badging their websites and having localised campaigns to take photos. Mm-hmm. It's the breadth and depth.
Now, this is on a Sunday.
The day itself is a Sunday.
Yep.
The campaign starts right now. It's on the way. It's happening. The website's up there. Check it out.
I'm really interested. You've got in here, badge up your website for Idaho. Can you explain what people can do to badge up their website?
Email us at vicavp@stophomophobiatoday.com and we'll send you graphics, banners, small graphics that can actually be placed on your website for the duration of the campaign and beyond if you want to, and that'll show that you're committed to dealing with homophobia.
Can people put on their Facebook and Twitter and all that sort of stuff
we'll
as well?
We'll give you logos for your Facebook. You can even go onto Facebook, and if you check out the Anti-Violence Project's Facebook group, Vic AVP, the Facebook group, you'll see there's actually an event on Facebook.
Which I was the second person signed up to at 2 a.m. this morning after Greg sent it off. I was very happy about
well,
that.
What do you want, a gold star?
No, I'm just saying, Greg was working hard for the community at the same time I was. It's
you
nice
were on
in
Facebook.
Cyberland.
You were on Facebook.
No, it came through my email to get messages.
Long. All day long.
It's good to know when you're in cyberspace that somebody else is out there doing a worthy cause as well.
It is.
Now, you mentioned that there's going to be this photo kiosk out in Bourke Street Mall, but I mean, supposing people don't live in Melbourne, how can they get their pictures up on your website with their messages?
Well, if you're in a local community group, if you're an individual out there at Bendigo or at Mildura or at Swan Hill or Shepparton, do your own group, do your own event, get everyone down there at the trestle table down at the shopping centre. And we'll help you. We'll give you posters. We'll support you through it.
Which, again, is that address, vicavp@stophomophobiatoday.com. But individual people who want to do something themselves, you've got a photo upload address for that as well, haven't you?
Yes, if you actually email time2, that's T-I-M-E...
Figure 2.
The number 2,
yep.
@stophomophobiatoday.com, you'll actually get your pictures up on the side.
Greg, it's a very simple proposition that you're making. Write a message about homophobia, take a photo of it and send it to you.
Exactly right.
What are you going to do with it once you get all these photos?
Those photos will go on a range of displays. Some of them, with your permission, will become posters. They'll be sent around schools. They'll be used as resources for the next 12 months leading up to Idaho next year in 2010. And they'll be a living testimony to the engagement of individuals and groups right across this state.
So you want extra stuff, not just a standard Stop Homophobia, you want creative stuff?
Oh, check out the site. You'll find there's some creative messages already.
Okay, well, thanks for that, Greg. And
thanks, Doug.
Best of luck with it. Let's let all get behind this, because I think it's time that Australia did something big on Idaho Day. Whether you call it homophobia or just plain old-fashioned hate, it's still something you've got to fight against. We're not too badly off in Australia in some respects, but the situation's much worse in Russia. So on May the 14th, this is our last program before Idaho, the Rainbow Report will have a live interview by phone from Moscow with Nikolai Alexeyev, the founder of the Russian gay movement, as his group prepares to take to the streets for Idaho, attempting yet another gay pride march there, with a very real risk of physical attacks. And of course that coincides with Eurovision in Moscow, so we'll also be talking to Nikolai about his other initiative, which is to get every contestant in Eurovision to wear a gay pride pin. So we'll see how he's doing for that, because everybody, you know, all these people will be in Moscow for the song contest final. That's May 14th here on the Rainbow Report with Doug Pollard and Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
This is the Rainbow Report.
Welcome back to the Rainbow Report with Doug Pollard, Hayley Conway, Corey Earlham, and of course Kay Serrar. Now, Queensland is a funny old place, and right now it's sending out some conflicting signals on gay and lesbian issues. For example, Anna Bligh has signalled the inclusion of gay and lesbian couples in proposed new surrogacy laws, but at the same time the state seems to have quietly gone backwards when it comes to equalising the age of consent and getting rid of anti-sodomy laws. Miles Heffernan of Q News is on the line now. So, Miles, is this a homophobic government, or is it just Queensland in general?
Oh, look, I'm just going to flick my cork hat off so I can talk to you properly. Now, look, poor old Anna Bligh, she sometimes doesn't know what she's doing, is some people's views, but yes, there's been some recent changes to the criminal code, and there's a bit of a debate about whether it was intentional or not, where if you attempt sodomy, then it is now got the same penalties if you did, which actually turned into doubling the sentence for it.
I'd love to know how you prove attempted sodomy.
Well, look, bruising on the outside, not the inside?
I'd say an unhappy, unsmiley face at the other end.
Take us through this one. You've got, it's not that you actually have an unequal age of consent as such, is it? The age of consent is technically the same, but that this sodomy law is in place saying that you can't have anal sex until you're 18.
That's spot on. In fact, they changed the terminology when the Borbidge National Government got in to change it from anal intercourse to sodomy, which often viewed as to be quite an emotive way of expressing.
Of course, yes. Very popular with the biblical crowd.
Oh, well, absolutely. I'm genuflecting as we speak. And as a result of that, they if anyone is under the age of 18, you are not allowed to participate in it, and there's no capacity for you to give consent.
So you can have oral sex at 16 as a gay man?
Yes, you can, and so you can, and if you go down there, you've got to lick around it. You can't go in it.
And if you're a lesbian woman, you can have vaginal sex penetration at the age of 16.
That's correct.
What about women having anal sex?
It's all out. There's no capacity for a Queenslander under 18 to consent. Put simply, and so what these laws actually do is obviously different from a rape situation, but in a wicked irony, it actually makes these laws now equal in that if it was an attempted vaginal sex situation,
that would also be 14 years?
It was always 14 and never 7, and so now that actually brings it in line. So in a kind of a perverse way, it is equal, but it's actually set back the sodomy process.
So there is a sort of logic to this, however twisted.
Exactly correct. That's a good way to put it.
Does anybody else have sodomy laws around Australia?
Look, I think that, certainly under the age of 18, under 16, every state deals with intercourse, but I'm not sure about what other states.
I don't think there's anything specifically mentioning sodomy, is there?
I'm starting to understand why they label Queensland the most homophobic state in Australia.
Yes,
look, heteros have anal sex too. That's what I have to say about it. Heteros do it too.
Yes.
I'm actually keeping a tab on the number of times we mention sodomy in the course of this discussion because I think it's pertinent. we're up to seven. Keep going, guys.
Now you're saying that you know it's a bad situation in Queensland in one respect, but I gather there's some improvement coming along on the surrogacy laws.
Absolutely, it's very specific with the surrogacy laws in that still if you're using surrogacy for commercial purposes, it's outlawed, and I think that's the same in every state and territory in Australia anyway. But where there is a specific need, such as in a partnership or in the case where one of the parties is not fertile, which is called altruistic sodomy.
That's mine.
That's mine, yes. We'll go there.
Altruistic surrogacy, and that what's going to happen is that Anna Bligh has made a party line that there's not going to be a conscience vote at the end of the year, that it will get in, and that that means is that you'll no longer be prosecuted if you participate in altruistic surrogacy. So that's a significant move forward.
So buy shares in turkey basters now. Corey?
Really interesting question for you there, Miles. Queensland's the first state to approach it in the reverse order of every other state. There's not equal parenting presumption laws in Queensland, so if you have a child, the lesbian mother isn't currently recognised as being the non-biological parent, isn't recognised as being the parent, and yet you're going to jump all the way ahead and talk about surrogacy. Now, as I understand it, parenting laws are outside the terms of reference of this report or inquiry.
You're exactly spot on. In fact, that even goes to all the adoption laws. And in fact, it's excluded for it's actually discrimination directly and written into the Act that a co-parent may not adopt if they are of a gay or lesbian identifying basis.
This is second parent adoption or known adoption.
That's the spot on. And as a result of that, and in fact, just before the election when the Queensland government was interviewed on this, they made the comment, well, there are only 23 adoptions, so why does it matter?
Because that's 23 not known adoptions or stranger adoptions.
And that's exactly right. And I couldn't agree with you more. And so there's definitely a somewhat of an impasse. However, after talking with Stephen Page from Harrington Family Lawyers before I got in contact with you guys tonight, what he tells me is that the Supreme Court is able to make orders on a case by case that will help address that impasse. So what it means is it's not particularly statutory outlawed, and there will be a capacity for the courts to make some decisions on the co-parent arrangement after December.
But there's still not going to be the ability for a lesbian mother who's not biologically related to her child to be recognised as her parent.
Absolutely, QNews put a lot of pressure on the Queensland government and the opposition going into the election just recently, and they were absolute matter of fact about it, that they had no intention of changing any of those laws and was not on their agenda for the next 3 years.
Okay, what about relationship recognition generally? Are we going to, because we've heard a lot about Rudd's attempt to get all the states to come in line and introduce some form of relationship recognition, and Queensland is one of the ones that doesn't seem to be doing anything.
Let me give you the exact quote which I wrote down when interviewing one of the honourable members on this topic, and she said, "This is an interesting point that I know nothing of, and I will undertake to learn more about this issue so that I may give you some feedback later in the future."
There's some good staff work going on in Queensland.
Look, can we just call this for what it is? We've got a national ALP conference in July, and we've got all these smokes and mirrors all of a sudden being created where people want to talk about state-based relationship registers so that we don't get a national scheme happening in July, and then we're left with nothing.
Absolutely, and bluntly, and this is an opinion of mine as opposed to that of Q News, is that there is absolutely supporting the federal government in this area, that they don't want to open up this Pandora's box. It's still one that they don't want the constituents to actually answer because they're scared of its reaction.
Yeah, okay. And look, I think this is something that is quite similar to that text message that we received earlier. It took the UK 7 years to bring it in, and let's just give them a chance. Well, no, these issues are actually incredibly simple, and they're incredibly black and white. And they are human rights issues, and
exactly.
It's just not hard.
Behind.
Get on your horse, sign the little, sign on the dotted line, bring in the laws. There are more difficult things here to handle than recognising some people's relationships.
It's a one-page bill to remove the Discrimination for the Marriage Act. I want to see people in Victoria and every other state in Queensland to write to their state, every other state than Queensland, to write to their Attorney General and say, "Hey, mate, if I go going up to Queensland and I'm in a relationship with a 17-year-old boy, if you're that lucky, then I'm going to be breaking the law."
We don't want to hear about your love life, Corey.
I think it's ridiculous that if I go travelling to the Sunshine State, I'm going to break the law for having an affair with somebody who's legal in every other state.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
And when you look at the laws that have changed, you particularly must pay tribute to Bob Carr for being particularly brave as starting the process with the, dare I say it, sodomy laws way back about 8 years ago. And Victoria, with relation to the human rights processes, not only has it not changed governments have actually come back in a difficult third or fourth term. It doesn't seem to be the political hot potato that some of our lagging states seem to believe it is.
No. I think it's as Sally said, the dam needs to start to break and then it will all come through. They need to realise that it's, not the big bogey they think it is.
No.
Well, thanks for that, Miles.
Wonderful.
In a moment, we'll be speaking to our correspondent in Sydney, and we'll pick up on some of these issues with him too. But thanks for your time tonight.
Thanks. Good night, all.
That was Miles Heffernan from Q News. Yeah, we'll talk to Harley Dennett, actually, in Sydney, about the impact of the recession on gays and lesbians. There's signs of homophobia there. There's signs that we're being among the first to suffer when employers want to cut costs and to cut staff. Has that been your experience? Have you been among the wave of early retrenchments and redundancies? Are gay and lesbian friendly initiatives, training programs and so on in your workplace being scrapped, downgraded or delayed? Let's hear from you on that one.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. If you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Informing, entertaining and provoking. This is the Rainbow Report.
Indeed. Welcome back, and this is Doug Pollard bringing it to you with the assistance of Hayley Conway and Corey Earlham here on Joy 94.9. Now, as the old saying goes, there's no proof, but I've lost a dollar and you're eating lollies. It's starting to look as if gays and lesbians are being considered more disposable than others as employers look to cut costs in the recession. Harley Dennett of the Sydney Star Observer has been looking into this one. Good evening, Harley.
Good evening, Doug.
What's been going on here? I'm hearing stories about young people, young gay and lesbians in particular, having to access services more frequently now because they're not getting as many shifts from their employers. I've heard stories of gay and lesbians being retrenched in the first wave along with single people because we don't have families. Is this just scuttlebutt or is this really happening, do you think?
Well, we now kind of have some research that shows that, yes, it is happening, and we've always known, it's not exactly a new issue that gay people are sometimes seen as not fitting in a workplace, they're not considered to be real families, so when retrenchments happen, they can be first. But now we've got a study to prove it. We've got the University of Tasmania, Dr. Paul Willis, has produced a report that shows that young gay people are quite vulnerable to mistreatment and sacking, in part because of homophobia, in part because they're the easiest to get rid of. And so in a current era of retrenchments, we're seeing that could well be happening. When you've got a straight man with a family and kids, and then you've got a gay man with a boyfriend, homophobia can certainly play a part in justifying why, well, we'll go with the straight man because he's got more people to support.
Hey, Corey.
Single straight man versus my boyfriend? I'm sorry, but no kid spends as much as my boyfriend does.
This isn't exactly new. We've known for a long time that during Christmas and Easter, gay people are less likely to be given time off during those periods. And this is particularly, you know, I notice this in the media because we work on Christmas and Easter. This applies to lots of professions. So yeah. Now it's going further than just not getting enough time off. It's actually, well, we don't need to keep you on because you don't need it as much.
What about training programs that are specifically in place to sort of tackle things like homophobia and so on, and, you know, sexual diversity programs in the workplace? Is any sign of employers cutting those back?
Yes, well, funnily enough, last week there was a conference to try and promote these programs, the Workplace Diversity Conference in Sydney. There was a special section specifically devoted to encouraging companies to starting up GLBT networks for their workers. It's not something that Australia's particularly taken up. Telstra's been the only major one to do so so far, but they're quite big in the US and European and US companies that are in Australia, operate in Australia. They've been the main source for us being able to see these happening. But cue the global economic crisis, and they're the first things to go because they're not core business and they don't exactly produce any money for them. They cost money.
Yeah, and I'm picking up on what you said about Telstra and overseas companies, I believe IBM has been particularly good in its diversity programs.
IBM, Merrill Lynch, they've been exporting those kind of programs to other places in the world, even countries where you wouldn't necessarily expect them to be. India, for example, that still has homophobic laws. Mm-hmm. They're setting them up, they're giving an outlet for their workers, but it's really hard to maintain that. That has to be the first thing to go. So they are in Telstra. I'm not quite sure whether or not they put any money into it in the first place, so I don't know whether that can be cut. But I think it's highly unlikely, even though it's being encouraged in Australia right now to produce them, that it's just not going to happen, because Australian companies, although behind the US in terms of the coalface of the global economic crisis, are certainly suffering, so there's it's very hard to keep that on.
I can see Corey sort of itching to jump in here.
Look, Harley, I hate to sound like a log cabin Republican, but where's the financial proof? Everything that I'm reading actually says to me that creating these sort of diversity groups within a workplace retains staff, reduces costs of retrenchment or leaving or retraining and all the rest of it, and the small amount of money they spend on it, actually they gain in their staff retention and loyalty. Where's the financial modelling being put up that encourages an economic hardship to actually do this?
I don't think there's been enough study on this in the first place. HR managers see these things as a luxury. It's not because they've had any modelling to show that it does or it doesn't give them any particular benefit. They've had people tell them for a long time from diversity groups, that they should try and cater to minority groups. They should try and encourage people to come work for their company, but they've never really understood why they should do it. And so now that it's actually starting to have a real impact, and they're starting to feel like they need to justify it, they don't have those resources. So
yeah. Really maybe Tim Wilson could do something on this. It seems right up his alley.
Oh, I don't know. He's getting pieces in the Wall Street Journal now. I think he's a bit beyond us. Okay.
Yeah. Look, I think the best way to deal with these kind of issues is to put a spotlight on them. I guess I'd like to see some kind of public acknowledgement in perhaps in the gay press or you know, that might actually sort of float into the mainstream press that acknowledges companies that do have, you know, diversity programs and shaming those that don't. I know that in America, and I'm trying to think of the organization, is it Lambda? Anyway, there are awards over there which award companies.
GLAAD,
yeah. And so this is just a way of, like, publicly kind of flagging or acknowledging or celebrating, you know, that kind of participation in the corporate sector. Harley, is that something do you think that your fine publication would take on board?
Well, actually, just to correct you, it was the Human Rights Campaign in the US. And
thank you.
There is one that is in the works in Australia, a similar program that will base itself off the Human Rights Campaign Equality Index, and a similar one by the UK Stonewall Group. And it's being done by the LGBT National Health Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
It's been almost a year in development. It takes a lot of research to go around and check every company's policies to see whether or not they're gay-friendly, whether or not they have non-discrimination policies.
Yeah, because that's quite big in the States, isn't it? They publish kind of league tables every year, don't they?
You should have a whistleblower program where employees can send in reports on their workplace.
And how are you saying they're doing this?
I'll do it.
they're doing this research now, so we'll have something soon, is that what you're saying?
I understand that we'll have something in the new financial year.
That's 15 months away, potentially.
Yeah, and look, I guess one of my greatest concerns here is not necessarily that these programs are being cut so much as that redundancies are being handed out to people on the basis of their sexual orientation or gender identity. And if that's happening, that's actually unlawful. Like, that's
exactly.
If it's a redundancy or if it's a dismissal, it is unlawful. It's not unfair, it's unlawful.
It's really kind of hard to prove these things, though, isn't it?
It is difficult, but, and this is the next part of my comment, which is that people need to get online. They need to be contacting those organisations who do have the industrial rights experience to actually say this is what you need to do if you think this is going to happen to you. Don't wait till it's happened. Get in touch with someone who can help you and find out how to deal with it.
Call your union, was it, Hayley?
Call your union or Unions Australia, who will help you if you're not a union member. That's right.
Yeah. Do we get the impression that Hayley has some sort of connection with the trade union here?
Yeah, but okay. I'm still employed, so now who's laughing?
Yeah, fine. Okay, great. Well... Thank you very much for that, Harley. There's lots more we could talk about, but we're running out of time here. We'll be back and talk to you again in a couple of weeks' time.
Will do, Doug.
All right, thanks very much. Harley Dennett from Sydney Star Observer. Now, of course, no Rainbow Report would be complete without the wit and wisdom of our local historian, tour guide, drag diva, journalist and radio hack, personality. Is there no end to her talents? I refer, of course, to the lovely Kay Serrar, who, among other things, this week tips her bonnet to the late, great B. Arthur.
Yes, clearly she is damaged goods. Oh, Doug, there's so much on my plate this week, I really don't know where to start. Golden Girl at the Pearly Gates, Miss Piggy Catches a Cold, Wayne Carey up for the AFL Hall of Fame. And that's just the straight stuff. On the gay side of town, you've got your good old-fashioned homophobia, which we've been talking about this evening, a subject which never seems to go out of vogue. Here in the land of Oz, the most blatant example of homophobia is our Prime Minister's resolute refusal to directly comment on anything lesbian or gay. It's like gay is a dirty word. Unbelievable. Let's consider the facts. When did Big Kev last use the words in public? Come to think of it, when has he ever used these words? Now, if the man has trouble getting his tongue around the concept of same-sex couples, what hope do we have for decent policy reform on issues of equality? I mean, it's not like there are no topical gay or lesbian issues on the agenda. Partnerships, or dare I say, gay marriage, changes to Centrelink, age of consent debate in Queensland, just three. The thing is, I wouldn't give a porcine sniffle if Big Kev was in sync with the rest of the Western world, but clearly he is not. When President Obama is dropping the L and G words left, right and centre, and I mean left, right and centre, the most recent of which was in relation to the lives lost in World War II, and when gay marriage is the hottest political topic in middle America, with some real legislative results, we should feel very concerned that our Labor Prime Minister, who was elected to govern for all Australians, won't even publicly engage with the issues. This has got to be a personal thing on his part. Show me the poll that says your average Aussie doesn't believe in a fair go for gays and lesbians. And a poll organised by the Catholic Church does not count. It's just not on, Kev. As of this week, I'm making it my personal mission to get the man on the hill to speak the unspeakable, to say the words gay and lesbian just once this year. I'm calling my campaign Loosen Up Kevin. And suggestions on a course of action are coming in thick and fast, the most passionate of which is to barnstorm Kev's next outing, waving dictionaries and chanting, gay is good and lesbian love and queer quandary. Okay, the queer one needs a bit of work, but I'm an old queen and it's tough getting my head around ambidextrous concepts. On a happier note, the mainstream media has shown its true colours this week in the hysteria toward the swine flu pandemic. Please, just shoot me now and get it over and done with. More people on this planet are going to die from current strains of influenza than Miss Piggy's dreaded cold. And even if it is all true, we are all going to succumb to this new virus. Bitching about it in the press with inaccurate facts is not going to solve the problem and shows little respect from the folk who have contracted this hideous disease. For some perspective on this hysteria, check out any number of links through Twitter, which sounds like self-promotion, and actually it is. Thank the goddess above for the birth of social network sites and independent media. But if we must have distraction from global economic crises and the like, can't we make it something entertaining like the campaign to induct Wayne Carey into the AFL Hall of Fame? Now, I don't know. Maybe I'm just losing it, but doesn't this man have a few issues with anger management? I mean, if you're on the receiving end of a broken wine glass, you'd be wondering where the principle of a role model carries any weight in the bowels of the AFL. So it's been an interesting week. And that sentence didn't make any sense, but I'll work on it later. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm off to wade through my collection of the Golden Girls videos. Surely B. Arthur, that big-boned, funny woman with the deep voice, has the answers to our woes. I'm Kay Sarar. I'm wearing a name tag which says so. And I made a promise to myself this week not to be too sad about B's passing.
Well, thank you very much for that, Kay. And before we wind up, and we're talking about giving yourself a little plug, you've got a show coming up, have you not? Why don't you give yourself a little plug for that as well?
Oh, that's very kind of you to say. It's the return season of Camping Out at the Butterfly Club, May 21. We're just three performances there, but if we had such a great response for Midsummer, we thought we'd bring it back.
That's your indoor history tour.
Oh, no, yes, it is. More tours coming up as well. But I'm very excited about this cabaret. We've introduced some new songs, and as I say, it had a great response, so it's good to bring back.
Great. So, Butterfly Club. With a lot of things going on at the Butterfly Club, but anyway, a couple of messages we've got. I want to get in before we go. Parliaments lack accountability and responsibility on reflecting social values on these issues. That's a real shame. We were talking about how politicians are a long way behind the eight ball on this one. Also, before we go, the good people at gays.com are running something called the Idaho Challenge, a community project which aims to gather much user-generated video together to build a mega movie with expressions of pride from gay and lesbian pride from around the world. So take a look at gays.com. That's not gay.com, but gays.com, and upload your video with them. Now, Corey, you wanted to talk about ribbons for Logie stars.
Very, very quickly. You know, politicians might be far behind, but we've got a call out there at the moment for celebrities to this Sunday's Logies to wear a white knot in support of marriage equality. People may have seen it at the Grammys and at the Oscars, etc. This morning I can announce that Carson Kressley has confirmed.
What do they wear?
A white knot. So go to whiteknot.org. And basically it's got two knots on this white ribbon, and it's for the right for everyone to be able to tie the knot.
Oh, fabulous. Yeah.
So hopefully if anybody's out there in celebrity land, PR land, get them to wear a white knot on Sunday. You can contact me at corey.earlham@coalitionforequality.org.au to talk about it. Carson Kresley confirmed a few other people coming back today to talk about it. We might be able to see some people. Keep an eye on the Logies.
Yes, and if you need something to tie your cleavage together to make sure nothing falls out, what could be better than a white knot? And some of you are definitely going to need it, aren't they? How about you, Kay? You're going to put a white knot on?
Oh, I've had my tubes tied years ago, but I'm not going to say it. This wouldn't be very nice. Just thinking of knots, I'm thinking laterally. I'd like to see Fran Kelly wear something, because she's up for a knot.
Well, she said she's going to wear a frock. Isn't that a good start?
Oh, no. I'm starting a campaign against that. In all seriousness, her doco is on Howard, I think it is nominated, and I think it'll do very well.
Oh, well, that's good.
Another
message coming in here. If I sodomise my 17-year-old clone in Queensland, can I argue it's just masturbation? I don't think that's a terribly serious point.
But so that was up to 12 sodomies for the hour.
Yes, we're doing...
Sodomy?
Multiple
sodomies this evening. It's been a very sodomitical show.
I'm really going to go home and dream about altruistic sodomy.
I think we need to reclaim this
Sean
word sodomy.
It's altruistic all the time, unless it's prostitution.
At my age, I think I could use some altruistic sodomy. Life's getting expensive. Anyway, that's it for another week. My guests tonight were Greg Adkins from the Anti-Violence Project, who didn't talk about sodomy, Miles Heffernan from Q News, Harley Dennett from Sydney Star Observer, Corey Ellum here in the studio from the Australian Coalition for Equality, and Hayley Conway from the VGLRL. Not forgetting, of course, the ever wonderful Kay Sarah.
Thank you very much.
Unfortunately, my lovely producer Bianca is off sick this week, so I know she's listening. Get well soon, dear, and get back soon, because I didn't like having to do all this work again. Technical production, of course, was by Michael Bayliss. I'm Doug Pollard. See you next week with another edition of The Rainbow Report.
This has been a Joy 94.9 News and Current Affairs presentation.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.